Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right. Defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. You have lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. We won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Do love this land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight's banner for the show is English Defence League radio show, death threats against Tommy Robinson. Please do nothing. And I go on to say, welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider-Mitchell. And my wingman for this evening is Dave Agador Milner. Tonight we're talking about EDL-related issues and other world headlines with a special focus on YouTube death threats against Mr. Tommy Robinson and his family. The fascist Sharia-compliant enforcers are doing nothing, not a damn thing against these online criminals, who would already be in prison if their threats were against Muslims. It's obvious that equal treatment under the law does not fit their master's narrative. We have a message for you, cowards and quislings out there. The time for your tyrannical dictatorship is almost over. We the people will hold every single one of you accountable sooner than you think. No surrender ever. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. And that was by the late, great Edmund Burke. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. President John F. Kennedy. And without further ado, let me pass it to my wingman, my panelist, Mr. Dave Agador at Milner. Good evening, good afternoon, Dave. I hope you are well today, my dear friend.
Good evening to you, Jeff. Good evening to everybody in the UK. Good afternoon to everybody in the States. Hello to everybody around the world and, of course, off Earth. That's right. We've got a big show, Jeff, and listeners, we definitely have a big show. If you're one of these people that doesn't like to hear about Tommy Robinson, as they say in Futurama, you're boned, because today we are going to be having quite a few. Exactly. We're going to have, well, the first thing we're going to start out with is the Ezra Levant interview that he had with Tommy Robinson. That's going to be in three parts. We're going to play, and then we've got some other things that you're going to actually get to hear some of these threats against Tommy Robinson and his family, and we're going to comment on that. And then we're going to talk about Brexit. We're going to talk about all sorts of other things. Jeff, before we get into that, though, I'd like to bring something up that Beezy of Beezy's Berserk Bobcat Saloon brought up to his audience. All right. Now, as you guys know, 9/11 has just passed, and a lot of people did anniversary and commemorative shows about that. Jeff and I did one, and we did it with Kenneth McClinton, and I think it was a really, really good show, which you guys are going to get to hear on the 3rd of October here on, at the regular time, Thursday, the 3rd of October, at the regular showtime here on the English Defense League radio show. You'll get to hear the whole thing. But another guy that did one, in fact, this was the flagship show, on the flagship show of SHR Media, with whom I am associated, was BZ himself. And at least one other member, one other of the network owners of SHR Media, and there were call-ins, and we had a few people call in, including myself, telling their 9/11 stories and things of that nature. And as is the case, the show was put up on the SHR Media Facebook page. Right. And in the process of checking through not too long ago, BZ noticed that Facebook had taken down that 9/11 show because they said that the indication was that it was offensive somehow or whatever, but they took it down. Now, as I recall, this was not a show filled with invective against Muslims or anything of that nature, but there was some truth-telling being done. And I've posted the show up myself, a link to the show, in my accounts at, of course, Gab, MeWe, Minds, Spreely, Mumblet. And guys, you can go there, and I'm Dave Milner or Agador on either one of those, any one of those, and you can share it through there or go directly to Spreaker.com and look for Sackheads Against Tyranny for 9/11/19, and you can share the show from there. You can get the link there, and please share the show out. Give it a listen and share it out. It's a good show, and neither Jeff nor I are amused at Facebook just censoring this commemorative program, which I thought was very good. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, well, I'm surprised, really. You say what happened there at the BZ, them taking it down. Well, we did basically, we did very similar to probably what BZ did, but they didn't take us down. So I do not understand that. And myself, you, and Ken, we didn't hold back with our thoughts about what's going on. We really didn't, did we? Let's be honest, Dave. It seems strange that our friend BZ has his flagship radio show commemorating 9/11. It's probably no different to what myself, you and Ken did when we did the show. I just don't understand the logic behind Facebook any more than I can imagine visiting Saturn one day. I just don't understand their logic. Is it just to shut down, to silence people that's speaking out? But they should have done that with us as well, shouldn't they, Dave?
Well, I think, Jeff, what it is...
We did no difference,
yeah, I think, brother, what it is, Jeff, I think, is that they really are scared now of the new mainstream media. And as I said, Sack Heads Against Tyranny is the flagship program for SHR Media. And you see this same behavior with all of the attacks on Sunday Long Live Radio. I was there on Sunday, and I witnessed some of that. And why? Because Sunday Long Live Radio is spanking CNN's behind them, MSNBC, NPR, all of these people. They're threatened by the voices of truth, and they want to shut them down in any way they can. And if they can't use things like Facebook to take them down, then they'll use things like attacks on the programs when they're trying to go on the net and run. They'll use those attacks. So yeah, Jeff, that's where I think it comes from, brother.
Yeah, I don't think you're far wrong there, Dave. They don't put nothing past them because they are flailing. They do know that there's a new media out there, and it's there. The as I've said before many times, they're the dinosaurs. They're the dinosaurs of lies and deception, and people don't hear their crap no more. And that's what we say. We're bringing the truth. We are the truth tellers. And whether they like it or not, the truth will get out there. And with what Rhea Bowe's doing, with the Sunday Long Live Radio Show, with what we do, we're moving targets. We could be moving targets. We can go from different platforms, even though they could de-platform us maybe from Facebook. You know what? There's still plenty of options out there. And we've only got to look. Look and you will find. Look and you will see. Message, our message of freedom, all that we stand for, will live on. Their lies and deception is fading into the footnotes of history, and it's going to go down with a big old bang, like Brexit, EU, etc. Sorry, Dave, and say something. And I stepped all over you, brother. Sorry.
No, well, you weren't quite finished with what you were talking about, and I apologize for that. But what I was going to say, now this isn't a current figure, but I found it very interesting. I found a story about how CNN's ratings are tanking, and it came from April of this year. And at that point, they were down below 190,000 viewers. And mind you, they have had for decades now contracts with airports, some government buildings, hotel chains, and things like that. So you can count a lot of those quote-unquote viewers just from people in those hotel chains who don't have anything else to watch or things of that nature. But less than 200,000 in a market share in the United States of America is tiny. I mean, You know, the Home and Garden Channel does better, man. You know, and as you've said a few times, Sunday Long Live Radio, World Broadcasting, okay, has been beating them recently. And they're scared.
Stomping them is the word, Dave. Stomping them, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, they're scared, and they don't know any other way to act. But anyway, this guys, go to Spreaker.com and look for Sackheads Against Tyranny for 9/11/19, and please share that one out. Give it a listen and share it out. And, you know, just to poke a finger in the eye of Facebook, because their eye is one that needs a finger poked in. Now, Jeff, brother, if you would like, I have the first of the three-part series that that I created, done by Ezra Levant, an excellent interviewer with Tommy Robinson. And what do you think? Should we start out the show with this?
I think that'd be brilliant, mate. Absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on, old chap. Go on, Dave.
Oh, very well, old
awesome,
bean.
Brother.
Let's go.
No problems,
all.
Old chap.
I'll handle this at all, yes. Let me just deal with this here. All right, people. You are listening.
Listen to his accent, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to his accent. Go, there you go, Dave.
Oh, well, it's very funny. I learned this listening to the House of Lords, don't you know?
Oh, my, by Joe, I didn't know that, old chap. My goodness me. Was you the chap who's sitting in the back with the large brandy? I know it was you. I know it was you. I know about a beard, sir.
A very large brandy, Jeff. A very large brandy. Until that.
Well, carry on, old chap, and what you... I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Now and again, me and Dave will go on a light-hearted pick off, and that's what we do now and again. So there you go, Dave. Over to you. Back to you, Dave.
All right. As I refill my brandy snifter, it's getting a little low, obviously. Please check out this interview of Mr. Tommy Robinson with Ezra Levant. A really wonderful chappy. And you're listening to the English Defence League radio show. Here is part one.
Tally ho, old chap.
It's just over 13 minutes long. Tally ho.
Well, we picked him up at prison. We got him a haircut. He had a hot meal, and now Tommy Robinson sits down with me. What a pleasure to see you outside of prison and free again.
It's good to be seen.
This time was a lot different than your incarceration in HMP only. I would describe that as torture, physical and psychological. How was it this time?
So I was in Belmarsh, obviously, and the governor of Belmarsh made a complete effort to make sure that my rights were recognised. I was in for a civil offence. It's not a criminal offence. As a civil prisoner, you're entitled to more money. So my big thing
is to spend more money.
£47.50 a week I could spend, which meant I could buy as much tinned food as I wanted, and really, basically, and fruit and things like that. In only last year, £10 a week I had, so I could buy six tins of tuna. That's it.
And you couldn't eat the prison cafeteria food because, of course, it was made by the prison Muslim gangs. How was it in Belmarsh? Did you feel comfortable eating their prepared food?
So I went into Belmarsh prison and come out of Belmarsh prison without seeing a prisoner. The only prisoner I saw on two separate occasions was Julian Assange.
Now that's amazing to a lot of people, that because I don't know enough about Julian Assange to come to a firm conclusion, but some people call him a political prisoner. He's certainly not a violent man. You are definitely a political prisoner. For the two of you to wind up in the same prison, the same unit, that's quite something. Maybe it was inevitable, I don't know.
So he's in healthcare, which where I was, it's a prison within the prison, so essentially no one goes to this section bit. So you've got a corridor along here, and there's no windows in the corridor, so there's a corridor, there's a door at this end and a door at this end. And on this strip, there'll be four rooms. A prison officer's room where the staff will sit, two members of staff. Then an empty cell, and then my cell, and then the next cell, which is another empty cell with a bike, exercise bike in it. And at the end, you'll have, then at the end is a shower. So, and then my, so for me to have it, so the idea is that you're as contained on here, no one sees you, no one knows you're there.
They call it a suite, don't they?
They call it a yeah,
suite.
For anyone who stayed in a suite in a hotel, it's not a suite yet. It's basically three cells, but at 9 in the morning, so they'd come, and my door would be opened at 9 in the morning, 8:45, and then when my door's open, then the officers then sit in their room, and then I have till 11:15 to shower, use the bike, so you're on your own, but I'll go on the bike for an hour. The bike was a godsend. The first day I saw the bike, I was like, because they said you've got your own gym. Because I said, I want to go to the gym. You've got your own gym. When I was coming in reception, I saw the bike. I thought, that's not a gym.
Is that all it is? A bike to the
gym? Yeah, but it was actually good. No. And then I'd do an hour on the bike. I'd pace up and down to cool down a bit before I had a shower. And then I'd have a shower. And then I'd go on an exercise yard, which is a contained exercise, so the exercise yard backs onto where my window is, and it's like you see from the visit room, it's 4-story high, but there's all windows looking on this exercise yard, so it's a courtyard, but there's no cells that look onto it. There's no cells around here. This part of the prison, this is all offices. But then at the top, there's 4 cells from healthcare. So if you've had an operation, if you're on a hospital wing, there's 4 windows that looked onto this courtyard. Junior Assange was the second window in.
So you could holler up to him and he could holler down to you?
Yeah, so 2 days, where were we now? 2-3 days ago, I spent 30 minutes when I could see him then, because, again, he's not having a good time.
He's been in former detention for many years.
Yeah, and as he says, the isolation is getting to him, or got to him.
I don't want to pry into any confidences, although I don't think I'd call it a confidence. Obviously, every word he said to you and vice versa was tracked by the prison and probably various intelligence agencies. I don't think there's a private word spoken in those contingency suites. I know when I visited you, there was a camera in the ceiling.
There's cameras everywhere.
Are you at liberty to discuss what you talked about with him?
I wouldn't be aware. That's why I wouldn't be aware if he even want me to. So through a mutual friend that was...
You know what, no problem, I just was curious. But the fact that you spoke with him was interesting.
I wouldn't want to put him... Although I spoke to him about a mutual friend we spoke about this morning, right. So anything...
No problem. I was just curious because I know our viewers will be tantalized. Now, when I visited you on one of those occasions, I heard some moaning or some shouting, obviously not from Assange. There's another prisoner. Was there a murderer in the wing as well?
So on healthcare as well. So there's a prisoner who... So in the first week, I was speaking to him because I couldn't see him, so I haven't seen him, but you can shout out the window and you can speak to the person. There's 4 windows there, but... And there's one lad there who was feeling sorry for him in the first week. He's having a terrible sentence. He's 10 years in. But then
10 years in isolation?
No, he's not in isolation. So he's in help. Yeah, for his door to open, there has to be 4 security, wearing full riot gear every time.
Oh my God, he must be a monster. Well, or maybe not. Maybe not. They could say that about you.
No, he is. So the crime he told me he's in there for, I checked out because I didn't want to be talking. I want to know what he's in there for. He told me he's in there for murdering his mate. He's not in there for murdering his mate. He's in there for murdering and raping a 16-year-old girl, throwing her in her home. What's it doing? So he's having a bad 10 years. And when I found that out, I thought it's good that he's having such a bad sentence, and I'm glad I hope he has another 15 years of hell in there. But that's the only... So anyone who's been in prison, it's the hustle and bustle of being in prison. It's the noise of being in prison, the environment of being in prison. But this wasn't like being in a prison because, as I said, the only person I saw briefly, which was once, so... And again, when I got in there, I expected the same as last time. 23.5-hour bang up, them to block, and they blocked... Like last time, the only time they'd get me out was at lunchtime for my shower. And that's when I could use the phone. And my wife at the time was working actually in a school, she's not now, but she was working in school. And my kids were at school, so I couldn't speak to my family. And they purposely done everything, so I expected the thing. And I was probably quite rude in the first day. I remember when the governor come down to see me, I just said, shut the door. Because I expected the same, but then I knew quite quickly it wasn't the same. I mean, essentially, that governor is in a position where I've landed in his prison, which is why I haven't got a bad word to say about Belmarsh. I'm annoyed and angered and frustrated at what they've been allowed to do again. By putting me at the Old Bailey, they know that sends me to Belmarsh. Belmarsh houses the worst terrorists and the worst...
It's like Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, it's the worst offenders in the UK are sent to Belmarsh. Salman Abedi's brothers, I believe, in there now. The man who attacked the police officer, the British, he come in there. So it's terrorists and murderers.
And you.
And a civil offender. So Ross Kemp, that's what, because Ross Kemp's doing a documentary.
He's a British journalist.
Yeah, he's doing it, and he come down after a couple of days. And I don't put it, I think he come down after a couple of days saying, how do you feel? And you're not a threat here, and he's right. And there was at no time in that sentence, after the first couple of days, did I feel in danger.
No.
Which is very different to my last sentence. So, as I said, the office, the governor, once I'm in his jail, he's got a duty of care to keep me safe. So he's fulfilling his duty of care to keep me safe. But the argument, what I was saying to Ross Kemp is, in the last 12 months, I'm a journalist. I work as a journalist. Whether the media like it or not, whether Jeffrey Cox or the British government, or any of them like it, I've become the most watched journalist in the UK. They don't like that. Now, they don't like the stories I tell. Now, if the judges sum it up, let's pretend for a second that I did commit contempt of court, which I didn't. Just pretend I did. Then in the judges summing up when she sent to me, because I had a write out there, which I read to Russ Kemp, I said, listen to what she said. My offence was unintentional. So she's not saying I intended to break the law. So what she's saying is, I committed an accident, an error, whilst working. Yeah? And for that error, that had no effect at all on the trial, they see this as a fit punishment. I've done, in the last 12 months, I've spent 2.5 months, 3 months nearly, on solitary confinement in awful conditions in HMP Honley, with them messing with everything they couldn't mess with. This sentence was very different in the sense that the staff were great when I saw them. You know what I mean? I only see them for this talk 2 hours when my cell opens, and then because of the unit, because of this unit that I'm on, I believe the unit was built for Ian Huntley.
Who's here?
Ian Huntley murdered two young children, two young girls, raped and killed them. Ian Huntley's on it. There was another, Abu Hamza, I believe, has been on it. Michael Delargio has been on it. So it's an isolation unit. But there's two or three cells. So sometimes when they've got some people on, they might have a few of them on there. But essentially when I was on this, it's just me on there. And so I said, I'm on this isolation unit for a civil offence. I'm feeling sorry for myself. I said, this is just bullshit. For the whole world to see, and it sends out a terrible image of this country, that a journalist can get locked up, and it's not just locked up, it's not like, prison's prison. I've been to prison multiple times, as people know, and I've had, in 2014, even when I was violently battered, I still had an alright sentence. I was on the wing, I was working, so people understand what your prison system is, even the terrorists. So the terrorists in Belmarsh, HMP Belmarsh, on the terrorist wing, they get out of their cell at 8 in the morning, they then get locked up at 12. They then get out at 2 and they're locked up at 6. They're out all day. They can work, they can have education, they can play pool, they can play snooker. The prisoners have football pitches, you have all these things that keep you occupied and keep you busy. So essentially your day is like you're at work, and then you're locked up at night, basically. So that's why I said, I'm a civil offender, I'm the least offence in this whole entire prison. but I'm locked up the most out of anyone in this prison. It doesn't make any sense. But I'm not having a go again, because I was stressed that I'm not saying anything about Belmarshall, because there's nothing else that governor could have done.
The prison governor was sent to you. So what could he do but do what he did?
Well, I asked when I got in there to be located in a... I didn't ask for isolation, again.
Right.
So I didn't go in and say, I need protection, you need to isolate me. They didn't even ask a question this time. It was straight, boom, you're going down here.
Well,
but they said... So I said, why can't I be sent to a DCAT prison, which is what my...
casual prison, like low risk.
Yeah, well, you go home on weekends, you know, and you don't get locked up. In fact, my offence is a DCAT offence.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, how can I walk out of maximum security jail for contempt of court?
Did you ever get an answer to that?
So I said, and then even the location, so if they'd have moved me to Exeter prison, I'd have been fine. Because they'd have moved me in a prison with low Muslim population, I'd be fine.
And there you go, people. Welcome back to the English Defense League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff.
Mm. Well, that was interesting. It was lovely to hear Tommy so laid back talking to Ezra. I mean, as soon as you see him come out, he was, well, you know, we didn't know what to expect. Most of us, people had been to visit him, said he looks well. But you know, you've got to see yourself, you've got to judge yourself, and I would say, really and truthfully, that if it had been any other situation, we might have seen a different Tommy. But I think the governor took his job very seriously to make sure, and that's what Tommy said, that he addressed his issues and his basically human rights, and done a good job, and so did the officers there. So that's what Tommy is really talking about. It's another situation, another prison, if it was only, it would have been a nice scenario. But it's quite obvious with how bad it looks against the prisons that the governor of Belmarsh really had something to prove, that not all prisons are the same as what they are in, only, which put the prison system in a very, very bad light. When you see the state where Tommy come out, and, you know, he didn't realise until he actually, it's like he'd been on the battlefield, you don't realise the severity of what's been going on until you actually, in the quiet and the peace and the tranquility of your own home, that's when it comes to light, and then he realised how damaged he'd been with the whole situation, and it would have damaged anybody. Don't think Tommy's made of stir stuff. It's something we've got to say about Mr. Robinson. He's made of stir stuff. He's always said that. He's always been a born fighter. He doesn't know anything else. And if it wasn't for that, the bravery and the courage of Tommy, he would have really found it. Any other man would have probably found it really a difficult path, but because Tommy, I think, as we say, he's been chosen to this path, you know, that it's path sometimes where someone has got to go and someone's chosen, and it seems like Tommy is that person, you know, to show the way, to show the light, and what he's doing and what he's speaking about. And that resonates, and as I say, all these people that have been doing, speaking bad over the years about Tommy, talking bad about the EDL, it'll come to pass that we was the basically the bastions of our country and the freedoms, and sadly we've seen that diminishing as we talk. We see freedom of speech is eroded away, but we will fight. We will fight every step away, and we will get freedom of speech back. And it might take a fight. Once again, the people come to the forefront and stand up, like what Mr. Robinson's doing, and fight a good fight. There you go, Dave. But I was quite impressed with seeing Tommy in so good spirits, and I did notice certain things that you realise that he did suffer a bit with the solitary thing, different things. I noticed, and don't know if you noticed, but there's certain things characteristic of people that you pick up on, and I noticed that with Tommy. It's not quite as bad as I thought it would be. I'm no expert on these issues, but it has affected him. But only time will tell. And thank goodness that the officers there, basically, was looking out for Tommy, watching his back, basically. And so was the warden, the governor of the prison. That's what I wanted to say about that, Dave. That was brilliant, that first part, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
Well, you're welcome, Jeff. You know, just my own observations, seeing him sitting there talking with Ezra Levant and watching him walk out of the prison. What a contrast that was to see him doing that as opposed to seeing him walking out of HMP only. I mean, I commented at the time, Jeff, and you know this, that he looked like one of the POWs from the Vietnam War. One of the American POWs from the Vietnam War,
yeah,
that came back to the United States when you saw them on the tarmac when they first flew in back to the United States.
It was heartbreaking, Dave, wasn't it? It was heartbreaking, brother.
Yeah, it was.
I remember that.
He looked emaciated. I don't have the vision to tell what was in his eyes or anything like that, Jeff. I'll leave that to y'all sighted folks. But I could tell that anyone could tell that he had been, at the very least mentally tortured. And Jeff, you brought up a great point early on in your comment when you said that this was almost a mission on the part of the UK prison system, because they've taken it on the chin the past few years, not only the way they treated, Tommy Robinson, but, the way they treated Kevin Crean, and the way they treated
Kevin
other people.
Kevin Crean ended up being martyred in that prison. Let's call him for what he is, Kevin Crean, in my eyes, is a martyr for the cause. A very young man, 34, 35, and if you talk about when the Muslims say martyrs, I would say that Kevin Crean was a martyr for what he stood for. He's always in my prayers, and so is his family. Carry on, Dave, sorry, but I just wanted to clarify that my thoughts with Kevin Crean was the first martyr to die under the system. There you go, Dave.
Well, you're right, Jeff, and I share everything you say. It was because of his beliefs that he was put into that horrible system, and then they just let him deteriorate and let him die. And as I was saying, that was part of the black eye that the British prison system had given itself. Okay, and they did, as you said, Jeff, have something to prove with the treatment of Tommy Robinson this time, and I'm very glad
they knew this time the world's eyes was watching wide open. That's it. They was waiting for anything, the world news, the proper, journalists out there, to not be mainstream maggots, what we call them. But the main world journalists, the citizen journalists of the world, was watching. The whole globe was watching as things unfolded with Tommy. Please go ahead, Dad. Just want to say that, mate.
Yes, they were. And I was just about to finish my point and say that I'm glad that they did treat him well. And I hope that this is a signal in the future, not just for Tommy Robinson, praise God, he never has to go to prison again. But for any other patriots, it's time for equal.
There, isn't he? Let's not forget, he had 15 months. Don't know how long he's got to serve. Very similarly, he got beaten at Telford demo when they actually, he got his eye cut, and then the next thing you hear was that Dave had ended up at the magistrates and they sent to prison 15 months. So yes, we have got other people. We don't know exactly the circumstances how Dave's keeping, but he's a true patriot, he's a true warrior. My thoughts and my prayers also go out to our guys that's behind bars, because they like to sling us behind bars and just basically let the system do with us what they please. But yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, as I was trying to say, it is time for equal treatment under the law for everyone, even the people the UK government doesn't like, because things like this keep on happening. You're not going to be able to keep it under wraps. The whole world is watching, to quote the hippies from the 1968 Democrat convention. But Jeff, if you're ready, we'll begin this 12-minute segment. This will be part two of the interview. We'll just do this. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead, Doug. That's right.
All right. You guys are listening to the English Defense League radio show, and this is part two of Ezra Levant's interview with Tommy Robinson, done on the 14th of this month. Here you go.
You know, this morning when you came out of prison, I think there was only one other group of journalists. There might have been a second, but the Daily Mirror was there. And it was remarkable to me. The reporter from the Daily Mirror was not just... I mean, I like a reporter that asks a tough question. That's the only interesting kind of reporter there is. But he wasn't asking you a question. He was prosecuting you. He was telling you why you were wrong, and why the system was wrong.
He's
not well briefed in the facts, but that's fine. A lot of journalists are ignorant. Maybe I shouldn't be shocked anymore, but he was saying, no, this is excellent. You specifically said, if this happened in Russia or Venezuela, we'd be shocked. He said, no, this is exactly... I couldn't believe a journalist was exuberant about censorship and prison.
They're activists. Rather than journalists.
But I haven't seen one journalist in the entire United Kingdom, other than a couple of guys at Breitbart, not one at the Telegraph, at the Times, at the Mirror, at the Mail, at the Sun, not one.
Well, my frustrating thing is, you said he was from the Mirror. The Mirror, whilst I was in prison, the Mirror ran a story, which actually the governor come in with Ross Kemp with the newspaper to say, and it's front page of the newspaper. And there was this story put out in the Daily Mirror. So the audacity of that journalist to come from the same paper, which absolutely made up a story.
They said that you were knocked out in one punch by a 70-year-old pensioner in the showers. I got that news in Canada. It was front page news in the Daily Express. I think the Mirror picked it up.
Daily Star, the Mirror, the Radio.
The Star, that's right. It was the Daily Star. And I thought to myself, and you were incommunicado. I thought, that can't be right. But maybe it was, if it's on the front page of the Star.
Front page, the upsetting thing for me is that I've been home and my kids have been sent home.
Yeah.
So my kids think I'm being attacked in jail, which isn't true. But the other thing is that page, that story's gone out. No, they didn't even ring the prison. It's completely lying. The purpose for that, if you read the story, there's two pages in the paper as well. If you read that story, it paints an image of who I am. It says that I come into prison thinking I'm the big man.
Yeah, they said you walked in with a swagger.
And I bully. It said I was trying to intimidate an old age pensioner. And then it said, so that is the image that they're portraying. Another story went out whilst I was in there saying I bought drugs in the gym and I bought drugs in the gym and I was rushed to hospital for taking the detergent or something.
And this was published?
It was all published, yeah. And they're just completely made up.
You know, and obviously they had... They didn't even pick up the phone to check.
No, because I asked the governor. He's like, because when he bought the paper, he goes, this isn't good. It's not good for our jail. And I said, it's not going to do me. I said, I read one of these a month.
Yeah.
But, and I said, did they ring you? He goes, no, they meant they didn't ring us at all. They meant
yeah.
And then he said, because one of my supporters had gone into the reception of the prison that morning when it came out. are saying there'll be hundreds of us coming back here. He actually said it puts my staff in danger.
Well, and it makes the prison look like a place with no discipline and with random violence.
Do you know what? It wasn't in these cases. Well, from what I saw of it, it had complete discipline. And the governor, so in that first week, when I first come into the jail, I thought 23 and a half hour lockup, everything's going to be, I'm not going to get in the gym. So, and there was a protest outside, obviously, planned, which I wanted. And then I know that then some people on the outside, for the best intentions, I know Shazia Hobbs was contacting my wife, and I'm on a prison phone that's constantly monitored, so I can't say things on the phone. I cannot be sitting in a prison cell on a phone organising protests or things outside. So I know there's a protest happening, which I want to happen, because I want it to be in a position as such to bargain with the governor,
right.
Which the governor then come and saw me and said, look, this is disruptive to the jail. We can't have this. And I said, all I want is my rights recognised. I'll make sure no one comes near this prison. And I know at the time there was a lot of suspicion. Like, I know Shazia, for all of the right intentions, was thinking that a protest outside the jail would upset all the other inmates, which would be problematic for me. But not knowing that I know that I'm inside the prison and no one's seeing me anyway, so there was,
Isn't that interesting? Well, did you have your rights respected? I remember, I think in my second visit to you, you said you had not received mail for a month. And I made a fuss, and shortly thereafter you got it. That upset me that you didn't get your mail. Did you finally get everything?
I finally got the mail. So essentially, the number, I don't complain about much, and once I saw, all I said to the governor when I come in, I just want to use the gym, just get me in the gym. And he did, on a Tuesday morning and a Thursday morning, before the staff started work, so some of the staff would come in early to walk me through to the gym. So
to the real gym.
To the actual gym, with some weights, so I'd be in the gym on my own.
Yeah.
Then just a little, so that's 7:30 they're going to get you, so this is a little thing that will just absolutely, so the 7:30 they're going to get you, and then so it might be a Thursday morning, I'm sitting there at 7:30 thinking this is the only time I'm getting off of this thing anyway, so I want to do it, and they might not turn up. So there was about four times when they didn't turn up, which then, when they opened the door, I want to kill someone.
Now,
I just want to get in the gym.
I remember in Onley, they cancelled one of your lawyer's meetings, and they...
Yeah, this wasn't... I would say that nothing, even when you people were late, I would say that, in fact, after meeting the governor, they done everything, so nothing untoward. With regards to the mail, what they said is your mail's up here, and it has to be read. It has to go through counter-terrorism. I think that counter-terrorism could have a lot more better time if they stopped looking at the letters.
There's 23,000 jihadis that are
reading letters from my mum and my supporters, who are the average age is a 60-year-old female. And actually look at some Islamic jihadis, but counterterrorism has to go through my mouth, so everything has to be censored. So that's what they said. But to be honest, once I made the point and pushed the point to the governor, instantly he met stuff. They were in on overtime doing my mail, and I read anyone who sent me a letter. I read every one of them.
Now, your first time in Onley, you had I think six big duffel bags of mail. How many do you have this time?
We'll check out. I think about 14. And I mean, for me, it's a emotional and fulfilling to read people's stories of their difficulties in supporting me, to read their difficulties at work. What is apparent is that everyone feels silenced, and to read what they've gone through to show support for me, and to read how much they care. So I'm reading all these stories, and to read the, in my campaign, in my MEP campaign, I was going the working class, the working class, the working class. Judging by my mail, it's a very different mix-up of support. And a lot of these supporters are supporters that can't come out. They tell me their work, their jobs. I feel like there's so many people I know now, because some people messing me daily. Certain people just think, I know your whole life. I hope you enjoy dancing. I spend 5 hours a day reading.
Well, I guess that keeps you company if you don't have human company. Now, in Onley, you didn't have any voices other than the shouting at you, because they didn't give you a TV. Did you have a TV time?
Yeah,
all right.
I didn't really. I turned the TV on in the evening, if I watch it, because, as I said, during the day, I've done an hour on that bike every morning.
Well, that's great. So you got those emails from emailofprisoner.com, those were coming through?
Yeah, I'll show you after this. We'll have a quick look. the cards I've got from all over the world. Just, yeah, it's amazing. Do you know what I mean? And it was also quite satisfying to think, to read the stories, and many of the mail would be from people who only started following me in the last 12 months.
Mm.
And many of them would say, start saying, I'm a law-abiding citizen, I never broke the law, I've always had trust in our system, in judiciary, I cannot believe what I've just witnessed over the last 12 months. So, in the sense, I think, if whatever your objective was within this prison sentence, which I generally believe each time is, would be to try and break me, is you're actually waking more people up. You're enlightening more people to the corruption of the media, the corruption. I'm actually, Boris Johnson, I'm quite happy to see the same government as, I actually like Boris Johnson, I think he's shown himself as a very strong leader, but Jeffrey Cox, the Attorney General, who's still an Attorney General, I think that government now knows what it's like when you get a politicised decision from a court. You've now got a politicised decision from the Court of Scotland, and now you know how it feels, because my decision at the Old Bailey was politicised. But if anyone who just, you tried to prosecute me, I got out of jail. We went before the head judge of the Old Bailey, he kicked out. What they then done is just replace the head judge of the Old Bailey and put me back in.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, Bill. Keep trying. If they don't try this, they'll try that. I mean, I read your book, Enemy of the State, and you know the secret police have a saying: "Show us the man, we'll find the crime." Like if you investigate a guy enough, you'll find something on him, even if it's an overdue library book. And I sense that that's the approach they're taking with you: to waste your money, to waste your time, to stress you out, to stress out your family, to fatigue your supporters. I think that they are turning the process into the punishment. 66 days in prison is a punishment too, but that's actually a lot shorter. I mean, you've been fighting this stupid contempt of court thing for 16 months.
When I was in there, because I was getting anxious and worrying about coming out, because I'm generally thinking, what next? Because what's coming next? And I don't know if I was worrying more because I'm on isolation and that makes you worry, or because I'm getting older, but I was thinking, Jesus, man, what is coming next from their point? What are they going to do next?
Well, let me ask you this, and again, if this is something confidential, just say so and I'll move on. Before you went in on an American TV show, InfoWars, you said you were interested in asylum in America. And that was an interesting talking point, but my point of view is if you're interested in asylum, apply for asylum. Now you can say as a pass if you don't want to.
I am 100% interested in my wife and children being safe. And that would
in a foreign country?
In the United States of America, I love it. With regards to myself, there's a fight going on in this country and I want to be part of it.
I can't imagine you in any... I mean, taking Tommy out of the UK is like taking De Gaulle out of France. There's no such thing as De Gaulle outside of France. I don't even know if you could exist outside the UK.
No. So, again, times change and things change. And my worry, again, was when I was in jail that something could happen at the house or something. When I'm not there. So all of those things play in just about...
Was it easier on your family this time because they had the phone calls and the visits?
It was easier on them. And we know we have the support. So, yeah, my son handled it a lot better. My youngest didn't as much. But, yeah.
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that was great. Second part, wasn't it? As the thing that stands out with that second part was Tommy letting people know how much mail he actually did, and we heard that he'd had about 14 bags of mail, which doesn't surprise us at all. Because he has got world support, global support, and of course we was putting out information every week, all the time that he was in prison. So we was so he got lots and lots of mail. We even put some on the wall, believe it or not. That's where he said that he got them stuck on the wall, and he got lying on his bed, and he'd be reading them on the wall, and he found it very humbling. I think the word that he was meaning to say was humbling. To listen to some of the people's stories, that's was supporting Tommy of what they, what most people got to endure being a patriot, you know, especially with the works concerned, and how so many people have lost jobs with that situation. But that's what we find, don't we, Dave? And we always have done. But what I did think with what Ezra was really stood out was the Daily Mirror, the almost like a prosecution pointing a finger. You was in the wrong, blah de blah de blah. Not being impartial, not being sitting on the wall, but attacking Tommy when he come out. Absolutely, just being there to attack. Because as I said a while ago, the mainstream media now are all about trying to disrespect and to talk down Tommy, to make him put in a bad light. All these stories about he'd been decked by an old age pension was totally rubbish, and the paper even took that down. So it shows you that the mainstream media are true liars, and they only do what fits their narrative. That's what they're told to do by the powers be, because they're controlled by the state, as we know. But Ezra picked up on that, didn't he? He picked up on the way that the Daily Mirror, and the Daily Mirror is falling like a stone in a pond, basically. Who reads it? God knows the mentality of the people that reads garbage like that, or what the so-called mainstream media is putting out there, because it's I wouldn't even salt my parrots and put it in those pages at the bottom of my parrots page. I'm sure that he would both vomit all over it, to be honest with you, Dave.
It'd be animal abuse, Jeff.
That's
yeah.
Something that stood out, part two of that. Oh, my God, yes, Dave, you're right. I've got to take a break. You want my light, pal. Dave, I'm going to pass it back to you. That's my response to the second part. And back to you, Dave, while I call back in, brother.
All right. And, folks, while Jeff calls back in, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you guys that the English Defense League radio show, I'll comment on part two when we come back on the other side here. The English Defense League radio show is associated with the SHR Media Network. There are a lot of good shows on SHR Media, and one of them includes my own, which is The Unpleasant Blind Guy, but I've been helping out Jeff here doing UBG on EDL. My show times, and what happens is we repeat these shows in little 30-ish minute bites that are easier to handle. We repeat these shows on The Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. And you can get those at regular show times, Monday through Friday. My regular show times are 1 p.m. Eastern in the United States, and that's 6 p.m. in the UK, and also on Saturdays at midnight in the United States and 5 a.m. in the UK. And my shows are also repeated at the SHR Media YouTube page, so you can also get them from there, and the Western Free Radio Network. And if you happen to be listening to this particular program from the Unpleasant Blind Guy page, Spreaker.com, or the other places, remember that this program here can be heard live on Thursdays and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States, and that's 8:30 p.m. in the UK. It's great. We have a great association with SHR Media, and right now, before we get into my thoughts on part two, we're going to play these SHR Media promos, these new shows, and there'll be a new SHR Media set of promos coming out very soon. So look for that. But guys, for now, this is 3.5 minutes of these promos for these great programs. You are listening to the English Defense League radio show. Here you go.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
Hey, this is Michael Wright.
And I'm Shannon Wright.
Join us for The Right Way with Shannon and Mike, Monday through Thursday from 7 to 9 a.m. right here on SHR Media.
Why are they joining us?
For fun things like sports, politics.
Oh, Maybe some news and entertainment?
And all kinds of other things.
Money and recipes and events. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so join us Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 a.m. here on shrmedia.com.
From a public locker inside a dilapidated Long Island rail station comes a show designed to piss off liberals using truth, facts, and ridicule. The Lid Radio Show, featuring the conservative voice from the People's Republic of New York, the Lid himself, Jeff Dunnett. Tune in every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the SHR Media Network. Go to shrmedia.com. At Lid Radio, we fight for the truth, justice, and a good kosher T-bone. If you don't listen, Hillary Clinton might sneak into your bedroom in her house coat late at night and blame you for her election loss. It's the Lid Radio Show with Jeff Dunnett.
It's your business diva here, Melanie Collette. I am inviting you to a front row seat as I discuss some of the most intriguing details of wealth and finance with today's movers and shakers in the world of business. Listen in and discover financial truths on a global, domestic, and household scale. Uncover topics that will impact your wallet today and in the future. Money Talk with Melanie airs Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. East, 2 p.m. West, right here on SHR Media and High Plains Pundit Talk Radio. You can't afford to miss it.
The new show on the SHR Media Network, Sackheads Against Tyranny. On shrmedia.com, go there quick like a bunny, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, every Wednesday, live and direct on the SHR Media Network, shrmedia.com. Be there.
Broadcasting behind enemy lines in occupied California, a mere 2 miles from the state capital, the bloviating Zeppelin's Berserk Bobcat Saloon Radio Show can be heard every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific and 11 p.m. Eastern, only on the SHR Media Network. Go to shrmedia.com to listen. You can also watch on the SHR Media Facebook page and the SHR Media YouTube channel. No goldfish were abused in the making of this ad.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
And welcome back to the Expense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, part two of that interview with Tommy Robinson. Fascinating stuff, man. I mean, so much in it. I have to say, you know, I mean, I could have almost made an entire Unpleasant Blind Guy show out of that. Because it is stuffed full of great stuff, of information. You know, the thing is that Ezra Levant is such a good interviewer. I mean, he'll get all sorts of great questions in there. And, you know, it's just like an onion. You have to peel it back. There are so many things. Obviously, the thing that appealed or that came to my mind was, again, how, as you said, the supposed journalist treated Tommy Robinson just as he was walking out of prison, basically. I mean,
it's
Mr. Robinson got to talk
when
to...
When it were contemptible, Captain,
yeah,
I,
yeah.
That's very minute. Go ahead, Mike.
It is. And Tommy Robinson, as we heard on Sunday, got to talk to Ezra Levant for just a few moments, and then this sleazeball from the Daily Mirror smarms up and begins talking about how great it was that Tommy Robinson was in prison for basically an offense that, an extreme sentence for what he did, quite honestly, should have been house arrest with an ankle bracelet at the most. I mean, that's the utmost, man, and really not even that. But, you know, that's what I would have sentenced him to if I'd been. But Now, Jeff, this is the interesting thing, and I'm going to keep on bringing this up because it's relevant, okay? Now, what did the scuzzbag from the Daily Mirror talk about? He said, oh, well, you were put in here because of all your supporters. Talking, in other words, referring to how popular Mr. Robinson is. Now, let's move back a few months to Tommy Robinson's lawsuit against the police for harassing him. Now, what did that apology for a judge tell Tommy Robinson when she dismissed the case? She said, well, you know, you're less popular than you think you are. Again, so I'm going to say again, Jeff, for the listeners, for everybody. So which is it? Is Tommy Robinson inconsequential and not popular at all? So police harassment against him can't be deemed as political harassment? Or is he so popular that he has to be put in a Category A prison for a cheese ball civil offense? Which is it? What do you think, Jeff?
I think you make two valid points there. It's hard to choose which one. You know, so I would say the two points that you pointed out, Dave, and without a shadow of doubt, I go along with the way you look at it, because there'd always be totally biased. I mean, they're supposed to be journalists.
Yeah.
So this is what gets me. Don't they realise that what happened to Tommy could happen to any one of them? Any one of those. But
oh, good.
Because it's Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson is what they're told to try to defile, to bring him down, is to, you know, to make a totally, absolutely out of this world things up about him. You know, having drugs in the prison, that was something that I picked up on, being rushed to hospital. I'm sure if that was the case, the whole mainstream media, there's always leaks and that, they would be all over it. It's rubbish. But that's what you expect, because they are not, they're not journalists. Basically, you can call them, let me see, there is a name for them. Actually, they're activists. They're left-wing activists. All of the mainstream media are now left-wing activists. I can't call them anything but that. In total opposition to the right things in this country, they have gone against all the good things that makes a nation a nation. They are destroyers from within. When we talk about the Muslims, they're on the same path as each other, aren't they, to destroy from within.
Certainly, Jeff. Certainly, you know. I mean, it's almost understandable what the Mohammedans do, because this is how they're taught. This is how their death cult twists them. You know, it takes perfectly good people and turns them into monsters. Okay, so it's almost understandable. The people in the fake stream media who are on the hard left have often abdicated their own self-taught. They don't think for themselves anymore. They let somebody else do that for them. And by the way, they get a paycheck for it, which is very nice. Then they get little pats on the back at their parties and stuff like that, and they get excused for bad behavior and everything else. So naturally, they can get into doing things that, frankly, some of the great journalists of the past, the people like Edward R. Murrow wouldn't spit on these people. He wouldn't have wasted the water spitting on these people, because he was an actual journalist. No, I didn't agree with some of what Murrow did, but he was a true journalist over here in the United States in the 1950s. All right. These people are a far cry from that. They're closer to the 1930s and propagandists from Nazi Germany. But Jeff,
my goodness me, how clear and brought into focus the last couple of sentences you said there. That was so clear and focused, how it looks towards back in the 30s with exactly what we're seeing happening to patriots across the country, being classed as, you know, dissidents now. I'm using this word dissidents because that's the way they look at us now. But with distance, the Mohammedans out there, I think they're under false illusion though, They're under a very false illusion. They think that they're going to take the world over with the help of the Marxists. I've got a message for you Muslims out there who think that's the case. Don't forget the Marxists have outnumbered anything that you could ever do or ever dream of doing. They killed millions upon millions of people, left, right, centre. You think you could achieve that? You will be on that list. You think you and the Marxists will do it together? There'll come a day when you'll be put to the sword yourself and the Marxist will. So don't think you've got your future is bright and rosy. It might seem that way, what you're doing, but all you are is fodder to the Marxists out there. Dave, your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree with you, Jeff, and you know, time's a wasting, so we're going to go ahead, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and play this third and final part of this interview that Ezra Levant gave with Tommy Robinson. This is going to be just under 14 minutes long, and that'll get us close to the end of the show, brother. So if you don't mind, we'll go ahead
we
and play this.
We need to talk about these attacks on Tommy as well, didn't we, Dad? But maybe we'll use that for the Sunday show, isn't it, yeah?
Oh, well, that's possible, Jeff. We already have some things loaded up, and we have some information for everybody. So, yeah, I mean, we you know, that is definitely a thing that is going to go on, guys. You know, we don't mind, you know, keeping stories until next time. You know, but so far it's been a dynamite show just listening to these interviews and getting Jeff's comments on this. But, Jeff, I'm going to go ahead right now and play this this final a portion of this interview that Ezra Levant did with Tommy Robinson on the 14th. Okay?
Let's roll it, Dave. Cheers, pal.
All right. You guys are listening to the English Defence League radio show.
I think because we knew it was happening, and I don't know if it's because I'm in jail, and I know. So when I was in prison last time, I felt fine. When I was walking out, I thought it looked great. And then everyone's like, Jesus Christ, probably the state you're. And then I realised I wasn't right from that time in jail.
Yeah.
So then I don't know.
I was shocked when I saw you. I didn't even want to tell you what you looked like.
Don't worry, some of my family did.
Yeah.
So then I thought. So then this time I think that was conscious on the back of my head as well, because then I think, oh, this is going to happen again. I'm sat here again, and then when I get out again, I'll have all the same problems I had last time.
Yeah. All right. Now we got you out of prison in the morning. Had a quick stop by McDonald's.
I've been watching Double Four Phantom of Advertising on TV. I know that they stop them on the 24th of September, so I was thinking.
Got you a haircut, you went home, had a shower, etc. Your kids, let's check the time here. Your kids are almost out of school, so I want to let you go. But there are two questions I have for you before we go. And maybe these are just of interest to me, but I think some of your viewers want to know too. We have a new Prime Minister in the UK who's a little bit eccentric in some ways. He's a little bit a free. He has shown himself to be a free speecher in the past. Do you have? I remember once he wrote a great column in the paper in defense of gutter journalism. He says gutter journalism keeps the gutters clean. I remember. I mean, he said, I don't care how nasty it is. Free speech. I was impressed with that. I don't know if he's that way today. What's your feelings about Boris Johnson's government, Nigel Farage's influence? Do you have any hope that the essential systemic problems in the UK will be fixed or not even?
The opportunity is there, hugely, for Boris Johnson. I think his cabinet as well. I think Priti Patel is brilliant. Watched her for years. She's Home Secretary. I think they're dealing with the problems caused. I think that the clear out of the 21, the purging of the people who are Remainers, who aren't actually Conservative in their views in many ways. I know you can be hopeful, but they're not going to let him, are they? So the battle that's commencing is Boris Johnson, eaten, educated, representing the people. There is I think he needs a pact, or should do a pact with Nigel Farage, so that the Brexit Party target Labour heartlands, that simply the Tories can't go in and get the votes. They've got the mining towns where there's such a disillusion or such a resentment against what is the Tory Party. The Brexit Party can generally fill that, but I don't know, Nigel Farage, I think threw a lot of people under the bus, but he has put pressure. It was the European result, so you have to look at where it's gone. It was probably the right move in everything he's done as well. Even when he slammed us, it probably has been the right move to put pressure the Tory party and Boris Johnson realising as he's coming in, if he doesn't deliver on Brexit, he knows the Tory party is finished. If he doesn't deliver. But people don't want Theresa May's deal getting rid of the backstop. That's not Brexit. So time will tell. But essentially, all of these things, it's interesting times. Mm. It's interesting.
Last question. Earlier you mentioned your identity as a journalist.
Saji Javid as well. I thought he's been quite great when I've been watching.
I like your phrase that you're a journalist whether the media likes it or not. And it's true. Journalism is an activity. It's not like a DNA test. It's
not just the journalists, but what they hate is I'm the most watched journalist in their country.
Well, and even today, all those tabloids, they were there because you get clicks. They say they hate you, but they actually love talking about you, but they disparage you. It's strange. It's like Trump in a way.
It's and the lies, man. So essentially, I've got plans. I'm just going to take my time, but I have got lots of plans for documentaries I want to make and ideas I've had whilst even sat in there. Things I've been working on with regards to confronting their lies.
Can you give us some hints? I know you're talking about the rape of Britain.
So with the rape of Britain, so people, just to get a few things out clear as well. Before I went to prison, I showed a promo for a documentary called Shalom. Jesus Christ, and the usual old school BNP types, the usual people who want to use an excuse to attack, and I'm a Zionist. Those usual people all leapt on it. Yeah? Now, I knew I was going to jail. Okay, I knew I was coming back to prison. I want to start working on the rape of Britain. I want to do this. We've laid the foundations, but I also don't want to mess about. When I sit down, when I go to those cities and start getting those young victims to tell their stories or their families, I know the consequence that's going to bring from Muslim gangs and from the police trying to shut it down. Now, so I know I'm going to jail. If I'd have gone up and started those things and then got sent to jail for a year or 2 years, which I'm expecting, and leave those people in limbo, right. When I go and start that documentary, I will move into that city for 4 weeks, right. And I will get every single thing on camera. So before I'm going to jail, I thought, I'm not going to disappear and live in a different town for 4 weeks.
Right.
I'm going to be with my wife and kids before I go to jail.
Right.
I got told, as I told you, that my case would be adjourned to pre-sentence reports. I had a 6 to 8 week gap where I thought, right, I can fit in Shalom. Yeah. Shalom was the documentary which we tried to work. We were all trying to tell, but Caelan was booked. With the fallout with Caelan and that, they had rights signed by, so people know Yisrael Shalom, people think it's about Israel, and it's about, and the word Shalom. Yisrael Shalom is the gentleman's name. He was a bloke who'd become a friend of mine who was persecuted to death. I'm telling his story.
Yeah.
Yeah? So rather than just sit at home for 8 weeks before my court, before going to prison, I thought I can fit in, while seeing my family, I can fit in this documentary. So my idea was to fit in this documentary, which we didn't get to fit in because they sent me straight to jail. And then the rape of Britain. So even now, the rape of Britain is going to be a risky documentary to tell and show because I'm going to find the groomers. I know who some of them are already. I know their businesses. I'm going to walk into their businesses. These sort of things are going to cause disruption, probably attacks against me. So essentially now, and I need to move to the towns and cities. I'm coming out of jail now. I'm not about to move next week to another town and city and be away from my family for weeks on end. So I'm going to put in my time period for starting that documentary. I'm going to give myself a little bit of time. That, and I've got another documentary which I can work on easily as well. But that's what I want to do, is just tell the stories that people aren't telling, uncover and embarrass the people who deserve embarrassing. The people sitting enjoying their pensions who turned a blind eye and allowed the rape of our children. I think everyone in the country needs to know their faces. They need confronting. And when I say confronting with a camera, they need to be put in the limelight, spotlight needs to be on them for a little while. That's what I want to do, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But I need to plan it right and do it in my time. And
Well, Tommy, your kids are almost out of school, so I'll wrap up. But I recall that it was exactly in the same pub that you and I met and chatted when you were released out of Onley, the horrible prison in which you were tortured. And I must say that physically, psychologically, mentally, emotionally, you were so much better now than you were. Shell shocked back then. It was like a detonation went off next to your head.
I wasn't expecting to get released when I got released.
Right.
So I wasn't expecting to get released. This time as well, even this morning, I was quite emotional this morning, but that's from being looked up bad. No, it's not normal. I wasn't excited about getting out. Which should be soon.
Isn't that interesting? Well, Tommy, I want to let you know because it sounds like you got a lot of mail, But we get an enormous amount of email and comments on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook. And I think you know it, but I'll just tell you anyways. There are people, not just in the United Kingdom, but around the world, who follow your story. They feel like they have a personal friendship with you.
Yeah,
and some of them do.
It's not just my journey, it's theirs.
Well, and the issues you talk about are so... They ring a bell for so many people. And so a lot of people, I know if they could speak through me here, they would say, please keep it up. Please be smart. Please be careful. Please make good choices. But please keep fighting. Because as I've said before, I believe that you're the last lion. And if they stop you, well, then who else could there possibly be? So you've got to keep doing it.
Again, I was asked that this morning. Will you be back? Because there's a documentary being filmed in Belmarsh Prison. Will you be back?
Back in prison is what
yeah,
they meant?
Will you be back?
Well, let's do our best to let that happen.
I said the same answer to him, is the minute you start worrying about consequences, the minute you stop doing what you do.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to continue to do what I do. I don't intend to break any laws. I'm not going to break any laws. I will defend myself. I need to defend myself at times. But I'm going to continue doing the work I do. You've seen how much that's upset and angered them already. I'll just say a massive... I'm going to... People get a video from me in the next week talking about my experience as well and about how grateful I am. But to everyone who wrote to me, everyone who mailed to me, all the people who spent their money travelling, some of the distances, I'm reading the mails of some people and they're telling me the times they're getting on megabuses and they're transported down on their own, against their family's wishes. And then I'm reading the full stories and it was fulfilling, heartwarming to read their journeys that they've gone on themselves, from being here to waking up to questioning to falling out with family I say the same thing to all of them. I've been through that same experience, and all the people who have turned against you or your friends that might be disagreeing with you and not understanding, there will come a time when they understand and then they'll realise that they're wrong, and you'll see the same as I've seen. So yeah, I'm grateful, and as I said, I'm grateful to everyone for the support, man.
Well, folks, I thank you for joining us today. And I want to say thanks to the folks who have chipped in for the crowdfunding. This is my third trip over during the period of your...
I want your air miles,
yeah, that's right. And Jessica, the young reporter, who visited you with a chaperone, I might add, because of the gossips out there, let me set that straight. And I'm glad we did, because you say that prison was exemplary, and I take your word for it.
I said this morning, because they've got this documentary, and they finished filming today. And I said, would I have been treated fair if your cameras weren't here? But then, if I'm honest, I said, that might be a bit unfair, because after meeting Rob Davis, who's the governor, and when I say meeting, in this unit that I'm on, every single day someone has to come from healthcare, someone has to come, because you're in isolation, someone has to come, a governor has to come, whether it be duty governor, but they have to come and say, are you okay? Yeah. Now, I'd say that, is it a bit unfair saying that I think that after meeting him, no matter what, he'd have treated me the same way I've been treated. He's a completely fair bloke, and he's doing a good job and a difficult job. And
well, I hope so, but I agree with your assessment. We'll never know.
You wouldn't know, but this is the first time. This is the first time they've treated me like that. First time I've been taken to the gym. First time.
I think that this other British journalist, him being there was important. I think the four rebel visits... We'll never know what it would have been like had not.
No,
I'm glad we did it, and I enjoyed visiting you.
No, when it got me, I said, so my day is 11:15, locked up, yeah? And then until the next morning at 9 o'clock. That's a long day.
Mm.
It's a long day, no matter what. It's a long day. So I said, on that ship blue map, you see them? It's on blue map. But, so I spent 22 hours a day on that map.
Mm.
But so when you come at, when I have a visit at 2 o'clock, that's completely... It weren't like a day, it weren't, for me, that day's done. Because then I think they lock the door up at 11:15, they're opening it again at 2 o'clock, then they bang it back up at 4, and then Frenzy's on.
We had a range of visitors. I was glad to be one, and in one of my visits, it was your old friends from way back in the day, and to see you just banter and have that laugh, it probably took you half an hour just to get into the conversational groove again. Because you can't live in silence and then just become social immediately. That's what made me the happiest, is it took like a half hour, an hour for you to normalize again, and the jokes. I mean,
the tiring of that is, when my kids come in, I feel exhausted after a visit, because I want them to see me in the best, like that nothing's going wrong. But even my mates, I said, I don't know if I said that earlier, I was going to buy the Muslim gown, I was going to do a new year and come walking into a visit, like.
That would be.
I was going to do it coming out of jail. Because you can buy £22 it was in the canteen.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, Tommy, let's let you get back to your kids, folks.
Thanks.
Thanks for watching. If you want to chip into the crowdfunding, go to prisonreports.com. I'll be back in the UK. Tommy has another trial. I don't think it's a secret. I think I can mention
it. No, it's not a secret. I was going to do a video updating everyone on lots of stuff because I've got 3 more court dates in the next 8 weeks.
Wow, well, I know only about one of them. I'll be there for the football trial where they're trying to ban you from football. That's in October. So you can tell me about
the others. You know the Daily Mirror journalist said earlier, like, oh, is it the Old Bailey because I'm high profile? Yeah. No, I'm at Luton Court.
Yeah.
October
18th. Yeah, that Daily Mirror interaction was as weird as yet. Let's get you out of here, my friend.
Thanks.
All right, from all of us here at The Rebel to you at home. Goodbye.
That's an excerpt from the Ezra Levant Show. Every day, I do a video monologue, and then I interview an interesting guest, and then I end by reading my hate mail. But you've got to subscribe to it, which you can do at therebel.media/shows.
Well done, Ezra. And great job as usual. Dave, we're right down to the last few minutes. I'd like you to just finish off tonight, telling everybody where they can catch up with you, Dave. And so we'll be back again this Sunday. So, Dave, if you'd like to do your final thoughts for the evening and where people can find you. Go, mate.
Right, Jeff. Everybody, please check out the Unpleasant Black Guy page at Spreaker.com. I'm also available at the Western Freedia Radio Network and, of course, the SHR Media page on YouTube. Okay, my show times are Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States, and that's 6 p.m. in the U.K., and Saturdays at midnight in the United States and 5 a.m. in the U.K., so please check me out. And I just want to say really quickly, great working with you, Jeff, as always, to the foot soldiers, angels, Brexiteers, and global patriots, both of the English Defense League and of everybody else. Be prosperous, be blessed, and no surrender. Back to you, brother.
No surrender ever, and I almost pressed the button just a second ago to pay Percy the patriotic pigeon. It's on my mind. I don't know why. It's on my mind, Dave. Almost pressed it. But, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. Great, as usual, Dave. Great slides, great scripting. God bless you, brother. And we'll be back again Sunday. There's some things we want to talk about, especially last couple of days with what's been going on with Tommy. So with that, for myself, Dave, myself and Dave, should I say, team, everybody associated with the EDL Radio Show, good night, God bless, and be careful out there, guys. Be vigilant and be safe in your surroundings. With that, no surrender, no surrender ever. We are going underground. Good night, everybody.
People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see the fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your voice brigade. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, and of mine. My New Zealand test was for Tommy's wife. And the public gets what the public wants. Pleasure as I hate me, I've been enough already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the facts. To be here for what you get, you made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your lead and don't place your trust. And the lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up. Tomorrow, la 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 la.
there you go, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening now, you're listening to the archive part of the show. I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. All of our worldwide listeners, wherever you might be, whatever part of the world you are, we really appreciate it. Don't forget, if you go check out the English Defence League website, EnglishDefenceLeague.org.uk. We have a donate page there. If you can afford anything, we do appreciate everything you do to support us as we continue with the struggle. God bless you all, and we'll see you again Sunday. Have a great weekend. See you soon. God bless you.